Hey, so have you heard the rumor that the restaurant guys are introducing a call-in component to the show? Well, guess what? It's true. So if you have a question for the restaurant guys or something you'd like us to discuss on the air, call us at 732-828-9459. Call anytime from anywhere. We'll answer your questions and who knows, maybe even have you on one of our upcoming Restaurant Guys call-in shows. The number to call is 732-828-9459. 732-828-9459 from anytime or anywhere.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC with the Restaurant Guys.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can reach us through WCTCAM or restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Good morning, Mark.
Hey, Francis.
How are you this morning?
Very well. How
are
you doing?
I'm doing well, especially because I want to talk about a gotcha moment that we had.
I love gotcha moments.
You know, it's funny. Being in the restaurant business, there are so many wonderful people that come through our doors, but we service so many people that, you know, if one half of 1% of people are jerks, that means you get a few a night. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so that's exactly what it means.
And every once in a while, you get a real doozy. The guy who stole your grandmother's picture off the wall.
You know, that's the story that people most who have never met me, who come in, who listen to the show, most want me to retell.
And we won't bore you with it here, but go listen to one of the other shows. It's in there somewhere. And it's the guy literally took the picture off the wall. And it had happened a couple of times. Now we have them bolted more securely. But the first time it happened, the third time it happened in a picture that happened to have a video camera trained on it. And we happened to get the guy signing his credit card, so we happened to know his name. And it was just, you know, it was just
one of those great gotcha moments.
Really, we don't often like those in the restaurant, but to be honest with you, every restaurateur is like, oh my God, you finally got somebody doing that to you.
So when we opened Catherine Lombardi Restaurant, our second restaurant, one of the things that we said we needed to do is we were getting bigger, and Francis and I weren't going to be in the primary location every single moment of every day. We said one of the things we need to have is we need to have video cameras on the entrances, the exits, and on the cash registers. They were just things that we absolutely needed to have.
And we came into work, and the city has been doing some construction, has contracted some people to do some construction in front of our place, and they've actually been really great. New Brunswick is a really well-run city, and they've been very considerate of us and trying to minimize the impacts on our business. But we come in one day, and they're replacing they've replaced the sidewalks in front of our storefront and have moved on and are now down the street.
And it really looks very, very pretty.
Beautiful.
They did a really nice job.
But we come in one day, and right next to where the street is closed and their construction site begins, so a place where no one else can get to, is one of the trap doors on the sidewalk of our building.
They're trap doors that, you know, the trap doors that you would walk over and to allow entrance into the basement that people have been walking over for 90 some odd years,
right,
or so.
Right. They're solid steel trap doors. And we come, and the trapdoors look like an elephant has stepped on them.
They really look like an elephant has gone and stepped right on the door.
And they are all bent and buckled into the ground. Now, these are solid steel trapdoors. And we call the construction guy. We're like, hey, listen, you know, it looks like somebody ran over the trapdoors. Like, nope. Couldn't have been us.
Not us.
We never have equipment over here. I'm like, dude. You're
doing construction literally 6 feet away,
right,
from this trapdoor.
And something that weighs 7 tons has been on this trapdoor since last night. Let's see. And the guy was just adamantly denying it.
And adamant. Just absolutely like, couldn't have been us, no way. And Francis and I are looking at each other like, you know, a car would have had to driven on a sidewalk, but the car would have had to driven through the construction site
to get there,
to get onto the sidewalk.
Right. A car would have had to pull up onto the sidewalk and then want to park next to your fence for some reason in front of nothing. And frankly, those steel doors could have supported a car. So it wasn't
right.
A car.
Right.
It was an elephant must have come here, stomped on that door, and then ran away.
Perhaps a dinosaur. Enough. Perhaps we had a late night dinosaur.
And that's what you said to the guy. Like, yeah. Oh, you know, it was a dinosaur. And we're kidding around. And the guy's like, oh, maybe, well, I don't know. You know, I don't know what it was. It wasn't. And I thought, you know, it defies logic. It had to be you. All
right.
I want you to do is replace the doors. And the guy's like, well, it wasn't us. And I said, well, you know what? It doesn't matter. We'll see when we look at the camera. And the guy says, camera? where's the camera? And we're like, oh, right there. He's like, right. Oh, okay, I gotta go. Bye.
It is literally, and the camera, now this is just dumb luck again. The camera, though, is literally facing down the street above the trapdoor. Okay, so it's pointed 6 feet above the trapdoor. You can't see the trapdoor in the video, but you can see 6 feet above the trapdoor, so you can see anything that's on the trap at that entrance.
And I watched about 12 hours of tape overnight because I wanted to see it myself because I'm pissed, right? I'm going to catch this guy. And sure enough, there's a front loader coming down the sidewalk, and the guy's like, and you can see when he hits the trapdoor because the front loader jogs left as the trapdoors collapse underneath him. And
if there was like, audio to the video, you would have heard the thunk.
And then he turns and he looks all around, and then he backs up and drives the other way.
And what I want you to realize is that if you're sitting in a front loader, and I guess the camera's about 8 feet off the ground, if you're sitting in a front loader, you are 8 feet off the ground.
Right.
So we are pointing, so the camera is pointed at his face.
Right. I'm like, you know, his mustache needs a little trimming is what happened. And so then we go and we give him to the guy, and I love what the guy said to us when we handed him the videotape. He's like, at least I admitted it. At least you admitted it after I gave you a video with it.
He didn't say at least I admitted it when we handed it to him. He waited. He went and watched the video. And then he called and said, it looks like we did it. I'm going to replace the trapdoor.
No, he said, I'm going to try and fix your trapdoor.
I'm going to try and fix them. That's exactly what he said.
Yeah, you're not touching my trapdoors, Mr. Hit and Run.
And he's like, what's the matter? I admitted to doing it and I said I would fix it. What's the problem?
Right after I caught you red-handed.
I handed you a video with your driver driving down the road and running it over, you admitted it.
Yeah, the big credit you got.
Get away from my trapdoors. Get away from my building. I'll send you the bill. Okay, Mr. Construction Man. Gotcha.
All right, listen, we have a guest coming on the show, a really interesting woman. Her name is Angela Miller. She has written a book called Hay Fever. She is a literary agent in New York City while being a farmer in Vermont, and it's a really crazy way that she makes that happen. So stick with us. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys on WCTC-AM and restaurantguysradio.com. Hey there, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. This is Mark and Francis, and we have a special guest today. Angela Miller has written a wonderful book called Hay Fever, How Chasing a Dream on a Vermont Farm Changed My Life. Angela is a literary agent in New York City part of the time and a farmer in Vermont part of the time and has just written a book in her spare time.
Hey, Angela, welcome to the show. Those don't sound like part-time jobs,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, really.
It's great to be here.
Well, please give paint in broad strokes your crazy life for our listeners.
I jump in my car and then catch a train in Albany, New York to New York City every Monday night, and I reverse that commute on Thursday to get back up to the farm, change my literary agent clothes and put on my farmer clothes, and on weekends I milk goats and I do farmers markets, so it's Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, all about the farm. I also telecommute so that if one of my clients needs to reach me and I'm cleaning out a goat's pen, I can have a conversation about looks.
It sounds like your literary agent clothes smell better than your farmer clothes.
They sure do.
What in the world prompted you to do this? I mean, you know, what about upstate New York? Why all the way to Vermont?
My husband and I had a little change jangling in our pockets, and we were visiting friends in Dorset, Vermont one Thanksgiving. And we said, wouldn't it be nice to have a house in Vermont?
Okay, I get the house in Vermont.
Yeah,
get me,
and I thought,
get me from
well,
house to
house,
farm.
A house with a little bit of land so I can have a vegetable garden, and maybe I get a horse, and I clip-clop around the property. And we ended up looking at a 305-acre farm with 15 buildings, and we bought it the next day because the prices are so incredibly low, or were, up here.
Can you share what that was, or would you rather keep that private?
I don't mind sharing it. It was $500,000.
I'm sorry.
For
that gets
305 acres and 15 buildings, including 4 houses, so we can rent 3 houses, and that would pay the property tax.
I was going to say, for what, $75? How much are that? you know, $500,000 gets you a small house on a small lot in Metuchen, New Jersey, with no garage.
Exactly. I mean, compared to the prices that we were used to in New York, it seemed like a no-brainer. Got to
wow.
do it.
But yeah, but then you have 500 acres to take care of.
Which my husband, who's an architect, was aware of. He was wringing his hands. He's a boy from London. What are we going to do with all this? I said, it's land. It's always been there. It always will be there. It takes care of itself.
No.
Utterly insane.
Here's what I'm going to help you with. My father had a small farm in upstate New York when I was a kid that my grandmother lived on, and we would spend weekends at. And what I will tell you is the woods take care of themselves.
Okay.
Over. Yeah.
So how soon until you realized you'd made a terrible mistake? No, I mean, how soon did reality set in, and how did you come to terms with owning 500 acres and 14 buildings in Vermont when you're trying to work a full-time job in New York?
Well, you know what, guys? I thought it was going to be a sort of grandiose second home. And then, before we even closed, we found out there was a rich history. It had been the first cheese-making co-op in Vermont, predating Cabot's Creamery, and I thought, oh my God, cheese!
Oh.
Cheese!
You're trouble, lady.
Cheese, that'll be easy.
There were papers written about it that were at the local historical society, and I worked with a famous cheese expert named Max McCallman.
Oh, sure, Max has been on
his 3 books.
Oh, he's been on our show to talk about those
there
books.
There you go. And so he nurtured my cheese dreams. And I saw, I did a lot of due diligence for a couple of years, and I thought maybe sheep. And I hired a young woman from France as an intern, and she'd been raising Swiss Alpine goats in Provence and making fresh chèvre for restaurants. And she talked me into these adorable goats. And I said, well, why not? You're going to take care of them.
Angela, all my cheese dreams have to do with eating it.
Yeah. Well, now, where she is she still with you?
No, she left about 3 months after I got all these goats. She didn't think the food in Vermont was good enough. She needed to be near the sea so she could have good seafood. So she moved on to Maine, and I had to figure out how to milk goats.
Now, are goats a lot less maintenance than, say, cows?
They're smaller, cleaner. They are incredibly smart and curious. You have to have amazing senses because they are escape artists. Because they love to browse just the way deer love to browse. So it's going to be the end of your garden and your trees.
Well, they're also pretty diligent animals, aren't they?
They are. I have a girl named Coco, and she has prehensile lips. She can open gates.
What is a prehensile lip? What does that mean?
I don't know. It's like fingers. I mean,
like
she can work anything.
Really?
Find her way out to greener pastures.
And does she come back?
Yes, because she likes to be with a herd. Uh-huh. But the problem is, if she opens a gate, they all follow her out because they like to be with they all follow each other. So, you know, I have had passersby come to my back door and say, you have about 90 goats out in the middle of Route 153.
Oh, man.
So you didn't start with 90 goats. You didn't start with 100
no,
goats.
No, I started with 6.
So tell us how you go from, maybe we'll have a couple of goats to, you have a pretty serious goat dairy. I will tell you that in our restaurants, we carry some cheeses made at your goat dairy, and they're delicious.
Yeah, both the Dorset and the Manchester have been on our cheese
board
at different times.
Yes, that's really nice to hear. I spent a good, huge part of my adult life in New York City, where standards are pretty high, and I worked with a lot of high-end restaurants and chefs. So Jean-Georges Van Oristen's been a client for 15 years. And
our listeners don't care about Jean-Georges. They already know that you're on the restaurant for this cheese board.
The bar was set pretty high. I mean, I wasn't about to try to go into my kitchen and make cheese just for fun.
Right, right.
Once I was committed, and I found a cheesemaker who's quite famous named Peter Dixon and made him a partner, and I got a fantastic former record industry exec to be the marketing guy, and we're just a great team.
And so now you've corralled all these people to come, quite literally, and how many people are based in the farm up in Vermont? How many people do you have working in this operation?
We have between 12 and 20. It's seasonal. It's not a huge staff, but it's a big payroll in a way.
Yeah.
So we have to really make and sell a lot of cheese, and at this point, we're not meeting the demand.
So you have more. Could produce more cheese, you could sell it.
Yeah, we need more cheese. We partnered up with a cow dairy in Vermont, and we co-own her 18 Jersey cows, and we make the Dorset and the Rupert and the Paulet out of Jersey cow's milk. And we're trying to get her to up her production, and we're just going to keep producing till till I can make money someday.
Good luck to you. Do you have the facilities there to grow this? I mean, is this something that you could do, or is that going to take another reinvestment?
We have two barns, and the biggest, most beautiful barn has been taken over by cheese production. We've had to kick the animals out of the big, beautiful barn, and we're going to build another barn next spring. So we'll have a huge cheese building and two barns for our goats.
So have you been?
And then I plan to add another 15 or so Jersey cows here for our own farm.
Are you going to add some Jersey cows to the farm?
I am. Yes.
I was just about to ask if you were. Have you been able to do any other types of farming other than caring for the goats and
we're going
and
to expand our farming. We do have all this land, so we're going to do a lot of hay production and sell hay. Our fields, I finally had them certified as organic, so all our pastures would have organic hay, and we will raise all of our bucklings as meat. We do sell goat meat. We will add pigs to eat the whey. Right now we give the whey out to local pig farmers, but we think it's time to start expanding our own sustainability.
Well, one of the good things about pigs is they will take care of the other stuff that you're using.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, I think let's talk for a minute about what I think would interest many of our listeners is, you know, a lot of us go to places and say, oh, wouldn't it be nice to own a vineyard, or wouldn't it be nice to own a farm? Or to actually do it now, how has that affected your lifestyle? Has it made you happy? What, you know, does it make you happy sometimes, and is it maddening other times? What's it like?
One of the most gratifying things is the steep learning curve that I had to live through. I mean, it's really wonderful when you learn something entirely new and you're middle-aged.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know, a whole new education. I had to become a, you know, part veterinarian, part cheesemaker, part animal caretaker. And it's so complicated, and I never realized, you know, some people think farmers aren't the smartest people on earth, but boy, do you have to know a lot about soil science, and the richer your soil, the healthier your animals, and the better your product is going to be. That's probably the most gratifying thing. And then, of course, I have to pinch myself every single day when I hear nice things about the cheese and it wins awards. That part makes me think, boy, wait a minute, who am I? How did this happen?
Right. Usually it's a lot of sweat and tears and blood and
it's been a lot of hard work. A lot of hard work. A lot of, I've never had to manage people. And in order to make all this cheese and have these healthy animals, I need happy employees. And so you learn business management. I mean, I've run a literary agency, but that's a little bit more solitary.
Turn back the clock 10 years to when you first went to consider Bardwell Farms. Are there choices that you would make differently, big choices rather than little choices? I mean, we all would make little choices differently, but would you change, you know, your whole direction and plan if you had to go back?
No. And I went to conferences with a woman who became a friend, who was planning to start a sheep dairy in Montana. And she's been doing so many business plans and being so methodical that she has the perfect theoretical farm, but she hasn't started farming yet.
The perfect theoretical farm. Yeah.
I mean, she has the most beautiful plans I've ever seen. But I don't, I just, my husband and I just dove in headfirst and we didn't know where it was going, but we just kept pushing.
And do you think it's sustainable in the long run? Economically?
Well, economically, we broke even last year.
Mm-hmm.
I have the guy who does all of our marketing and sales is a very conservative business type who really watches every penny. I tend to be far more entrepreneurial, and I'm like, okay, let's get it. Let's do it.
Mm-hmm.
Who cares where we get the money?
Right.
And so we have the perfect balance of Chris saying, no, not yet, or let's not increase production yet. This, you know, so we have a lot of good checks and balances.
All right. One of the things that you deal with in this book, I mean, the book is wonderful and a really pleasant read. It's really a lovely read.
Thank you very much.
One of the things I found myself really, because I'm not really an animal person, but I'm fascinated with the goats, and you deal a lot with the personality of your different goats, and I can't even believe I'm interested in this, so I'm asking the questions. Talk to us about, first of all, I think that when you talk about having to separate goats from their mothers and when to do that, I thought that was fascinating. And then I'd love for you to talk about your different goats and their personalities.
Well, there's no easy answer, and it's one of the most basic questions that I did a talk to second graders in New York City this year. And the first thing they asked me was, what happens to the babies, and how do you get them? And you know, because you've read the book, we have to make decisions about when to separate babies and mothers so we can get milk to make the cheese.
Sure, because the mother still has to make the milk, and we need it for cheese. It can't all go to the baby.
It can't all go to the baby. And we've tried keeping babies on their moms all day and then taking the moms away at night and getting the moms morning milk and letting the babies be with the moms all day after that. We've tried taking babies away at birth, so the bond never is able to develop. And
isn't that the traditional model of what to do with a goat farm?
It's the traditional model, and we actually find that it's better to let the moms raise the baby for a week or two and teach them to be goats, and they take fabulous care of the babies. They know exactly what to do, and they tell the babies how to behave. And then we separate them gradually.
How do you do that gradually, and how do the goats react?
Again, by for another week, taking the moms away at night. The babies all cuddle up together, and then the moms go back in. After we get the morning milk, moms go back in for the day, do that for about a week, and then do it every other day. And slowly but surely, it's not that the bond is broken, but they know that they can be apart.
Right, they become independent.
Mm-hmm. And then we start. The babies are, you know, 3 weeks to a month old at that point, and we simultaneously teach them how to take bottles.
Now, do the animals react negatively to this separation process, or does it seem sort of organic?
Some of them don't seem to mind, and others mind terribly. Mm-hmm. And scream and cry, and we'll just put the baby back on them. It's the mothers who go really bonkers.
Now, so now you have these goats, and the goats you talk about in the book, and I find it fascinating how goats, more than many animals, really develop individual personalities. Though they're in a herd, you really get to know the individual goats.
I think that my hunch, they say sheep are dumb, but my hunch is all animals have personalities. And if you have way too many of them, then you never get to know any of them. But mine definitely, one will be more sensitive than another one. Magnolia always wants to be with her mom, Iris. They sleep together. They go on the milk stand together. And whenever Iris, who's now 10 and Magnolia's 8, Magnolia will cry for Iris if she can't be around her.
This many years later?
This many years later. They, you know, when you take the babies away, they grieve terribly. I mean, it's just, they feel all, I can only imagine what would happen if my baby were taken away.
Right.
So, and they live far more instinctually than we do.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you come to grips with that? How do I cope with it?
It's really hard every single year to cope with it.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to have babies every year in order to get milk.
Right, sure. But beyond just that specific aspect, I mean, you talk about one goat who doesn't like to have anybody walk behind her, and you have
Petunia.
One goat. Who,
yeah. Petunia was one of my first goats, and so I didn't know her when she was, as she was getting older. I mean, I bought her when she was 2, but that was the first time I met her. And she would always give me a little nip if I walked behind her. And I called the woman I bought her from and said, "What's up with this goat?" And she said, she was the runt of the litter, and she always had to be last, and now that's where she's happy to be. And she doesn't want anyone else to be behind her.
Well, we have a story of smart goats, good milk, crazy lady making it. God bless you for all your hard work.
Great cheese.
But the cheese is
well,
delicious.
You guys got to come up here sometime. And
you know, I love Vermont.
I love Vermont.
Francis talked about it earlier in the show. You cross that border and it's different.
It's different.
The mentality's different. It just feels like you're in a different place. Feels like you're in a different state, even though they touch
you,
one
you
another.
You are in a different state.
Well, you know, I think a long time ago it was a republic. On
yeah.
Its own.
Uh-huh. Like Texas.
Minted their own money.
Well, you know, I often ride my motorcycle up to Vermont, and it really is when you cross into Vermont, it's just a very different feel to everything.
Yeah, I feel the same way. It's like, whoa, these green mountains.
Well, Angela, thanks for coming on the
show.
Well,
guys, thank you very much for having me.
Angela Miller's book is Hay Fever, How Chasing a Dream on a Vermont Farm Changed My Life. You can find out more about it at restaurantguysradio.com. And we'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys on WCTC AM and restaurantguysradio.com.
Let me talk to you about lighting, and specifically about how you can enhance the appeal of any space. Lighting is a powerful, emotional, and aesthetic force. It's one of the most important elements of design. More than anything else, it sets the mood and tone for an entire experience. A room pops or it doesn't based on lighting. Lights on Nine is a top-notch commercial and retail lighting supplier. Lights on Nine supplied all the lights for our award-winning Catherine Lombardi restaurant, inside and out, dining room and kitchen. Lights on Nine has everything from tasteful and stylish chandeliers to table and floor lamps to outdoor lighting for illuminating a building or walkway or a sign. At Lights on Nine, the service is exemplary, expert, and knowledgeable. They ship anywhere in the continental United States for free. Their retail store is in the Galleria Shopping Center on Route 9 in Manalapan. They're open 7 days a week. Call them at 732-308-9166. That's 732-308-9166. Or visit them at lightsonnine.com. That's lightson9.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to Mark and Francis, the Restaurant Guys, show about goats. I don't know why I was so fascinated with the animals themselves, but I was fascinating.
You know, she wrote about them and their personalities and how each of them affected the farm a little bit differently, and it was interesting.
Going to go get on my motorcycle and visit her in the spring, and I would like to see the goats, but I'm just not a farmer, man.
It's such a hard life.
Business harder than restaurant business.
It's so hard, and obviously she's splitting her time between being at the farm, and it's 52 weeks a year. There's no vacation when you're a farmer.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
There is no such thing. I mean, you can have some people, you know, obviously she has people working on the farm with her, but it's something you have to be just focused on 52 weeks a year. You can never escape it.
And her weeks are 7-day weeks, because even if you're a farmer, you try and get half a Sunday off, you know,
mm-hmm.
But and you can't always do that, but she is in Manhattan a few days a week, and God bless her, okay, and pursuing the dream. And those cheeses are excellent. Not only have they won awards.
Yeah, I mean, realize that before we ever knew who she was and ever heard of this book, her cheeses were on our cheese board. I mean,
yeah.
this is a serious cheese program that she's created over the last few years with these goat's milk cheeses, and they're delicious and belong up there with on world class cheese boards.
Well, God bless her. Not the life for me. Thank you very much. Glad she's doing it because I couldn't. I like the rest.
Definitely in the better you than me category for me.
Well, I hope you enjoyed the last half an hour with the Restaurant Guys, and we certainly have. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are the Restaurant Guys on WCTC AM and on RestaurantGuysRadio.com.